Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. My name is Dan from 51vb.com. I haven't done a solo podcast for a little while. Hope you guys enjoy this one. What I did for this podcast is this morning, I put up a story on Instagram with, you know, that option where you can solicit questions from people. I did that, and I'm going to go over some of the more interesting ones I got today. Kind of do like a mailbag for all my Instagram followers. And if you're listening to this podcast and you don't follow me on Instagram, you can check out the stuff I post there on at 51VB. So the first question of the day, the Frigulum. Who do you think will win the Coppa Italia? This is actually pretty convenient for me because I wanted to talk about the Italian Cup happening this weekend anyway. So if you didn't already know, on Saturday, the semifinals of the Italian Cup, which is kind of a mid-season tournament for the best teams in Italy. It'll start taking place on Saturday, and our two matchups are Modena versus Perugia and Lubice Vitanova versus Trentino. And those games will be taking place, I believe, at 9:30 and noon on Saturday. So as to my predictions and thoughts about the tournament, honestly, I'm just really excited to watch this tournament. The battles between the top four teams, the big four, as I like to call them, in Italian volleyball have been really intense this year. I do think Modena is kind of the weak link of these four teams. So I think in that first semifinals matchup, I think Perugia's serve and their attacking is a little too much for Modena to handle. So I predict a relatively easy win for Perugia there. We know that Micah Christensen and Max Holt aren't at 100%. Micah, there's a chance he might not even play, at least for that game. And I think we've seen all Perugia needs is one really strong service run from Leon, or one really strong service run from Atanasijevic, and then a set is sealed for them. Even though Perugia hasn't been playing their best volleyball ever the past few weeks, I think they'll get this one on Saturday and move on to the finals. But I think the second semifinals game is where things get a lot more interesting. The matchup between Lubice Vitanova and Trentino. Trentino has had an absolutely fantastic season so far. They're second in the standings, only 1 point behind first place Perugia, a team that they beat 3-0 in their last matchup. However, pretty much the only team that has had the answer to Trentino so far has been Lubice Vitanova, who, unfortunately for Trentino, is who they have to face in this Coppa Italia semifinals matchup. I think Lubice Vitanova, as I said before, I think their talent level is arguably the highest, not just in Italy, but maybe out of any club team in the entire world. And I think the rare games where they do put it together, I think they're pretty much an impossible team to beat. I think they match up pretty decently with Trentino. I think Robert Landy-Simon is one of the only middles who can go toe-to-toe with Sreco Lizanac from an offensive perspective. I think other than Perugia, they're one of the only teams that can put enough service pressure on Trentino to disrupt their offensive game plan, because we all know if Trentino can have their full offense running, pretty much impossible to stop. And I don't know if we're going to get the same performance out of Luka Vitoria and Uroš Kovačević that we've seen in the past. Those two are pretty inconsistent players, in the fact that they've actually had a lot of games this season where they both played well at the same time. Frankly, to me, says they're playing above their heads a bit, but it could really go either way. This is a tough decision. But I think Lubice Vitanova is the team that will advance to the finals, where they will play on February 10th. Check that out on riseport.it if you want to watch that matchup, or I'm sure there's highlights floating around everywhere. And also, if you're a Reddit user, my good friend Everett just created a new subreddit called r/volleystreams, and he will be posting a lot of links that you can watch the games through there as well. So before I get to the other questions, I just want to go over some rumors and news coming out of the Italian Pro League right now. So in my opinion, one of the juiciest things that I heard this week is rumors of Kevin Tilley making his way to Modena after his playoffs in the Chinese league are over, where he's with Beijing right now. People first kind of clued into Kevin Tilley maybe going somewhere after he talked about it on the Freeball podcast, which is a great podcast that I highly recommend you guys check out, where he basically said, yeah, I would be open to, you know, going and playing in another league somewhere more competitive after my time in Beijing is over. And, you know, when you say when players want to join a competitive league, it's generally, you know, Italy would be the main one, especially for French players or maybe Poland, but in this case, Italy. And then this week, Laurent Tilley was actually spotted at a game in Modena, which is not completely unheard of, but it is the first time it's happened without one of his French national team players being there. So, you know, put two and two together. I mean, he would make a lot of sense in Modena. You know, obviously Dennis Caliberta, as everyone but Velasco knew before now, is not even close to acceptable level of play at this, you know, the top four Italian team, which is the highest level in the world. So it'd be nice to have the third outside hitter. The thing is, like, Ernau and Bednors, they're still really good players, especially Ernau, but they aren't quite as complete as the outsides for the other big four teams. And I mean, look at some of the outsides on the other teams, like Wilfredo Leon, Yoandri Leal, Osmani Wantarina, Aaron Russell, Uros Kovacevic. Like, these guys are the best of the best. So you want that kind of player when you're competing at this level. But the issue right now seems to be that Modena envisions Kevin Tilley as more of a like back row specialist, where he's able to serve, hit the pipe ball, and then probably let Bednarz play most of the time in the front row, which Kevin wants to be the full-time starter. I mean, I get it. He's a superstar. He's really good outside. And if he's going to come all the way to Modena to play, probably he wants to have that level of competition that he came there for. Other than that, Kubiak was also rumored as a potential addition to Modena after he finishes his season in Japan. The Asian leagues tend to finish a bit sooner, which is why these situations even happen. And he's even on another level than Tilley. So I think if they manage to convince Kubiak to come to Modena, that would be pretty spectacular and really be a game changer in their postseason hopes. And then the other little tidbit of news I'm going to talk about is Luigi Randazzo, the Italian outside hitter playing for Padova. He recently tore his ACL, and he was just in for a successful surgery, which is great news to hear. But he will be out for at least 6 months, which means he will miss Nations League, and more importantly, he'll miss the Olympic qualifier tournaments happening in August. And this is a really big blow for Italy, because Osmani Wantarina has already said he's done with the national team, he's not going to play. And with Randazzo out, and Oleg Antonov potentially, I don't know how he feels about the Italian team. I know there's some tension there. Like, there's a realistic chance that Italy might have to start with Lanza and Mariotti as their outsides, which would just be an absolute disaster and pretty much kill any chance they have of beating Serbia in that Olympic qualifiers tournament. It's kind of questionable whether he can return for the European Championships as well, in which case Italy's chances would be severely harmed there as well. And it's also tough moves for Padova that he's out for the entire season, because they did bring in Canadian hitter Riley Barnes, but it looks like Barnes still isn't quite recovered either mentally or physically from his surgery, so he hasn't been effective, and they've resorted to playing Lazar Sirovic, who he's a fine player, but again, not a starting level player at the Italian Super League level. All right, so time for our second question from Sakusaka _ Isa. And he asks, or she, what do you think about James Shaw playing opposite Inzaghi? So I think this is the news that kind of had everyone shook, because it really came out of nowhere. James Shaw, who's had quite a bit of experience with the American national team as a setter, kind of a backup to Micah Christensen, usually behind Koike Shoji as well, but he has been on the men's team before, and setter at Stanford, played his first pro season, played in Italy for Perugia, but then decided he had had enough of pro volleyball and returned to Stanford to complete his education. And in the majority of cases, when a player is like, okay, pro volleyball isn't for me. I played 2 years, you know, go back to school, go see my family and friends, figure out what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Usually they don't come back and they'll just be a really good rec league player for the rest of their life. But James Shaw, you know, he went back, finished. I think he only must have only had a few classes left at Stanford. Now he's coming back to pro volleyball, which I love. But interestingly enough, not as a setter, but as an opposite. I mean, it's not that crazy because he does have opposite size. I believe he's 6'8", which is massive for a setter, but pretty much one of the accepted heights as an opposite. Really athletic guy, jumps out of the gym. And we've seen this transition a couple of times in some high-profile cases. Most famously, Ivan Zaitsev started his career as a setter. And then more recently, Namir Abdelaziz was a setter for a long time. Even for the Dutch national team, he was a setter. And now is killing it at opposite. It makes sense that tall and hyper-athletic setters are able to easily make the transition to opposite because the blocking is the same, obviously, between setter and opposite. And as an opposite, you don't have to pass at all. So that's one of the hardest skills to learn, which you can completely ignore. As a setter, you just need to be able to hit. I am surprised Zaxa decided to sign him, though, as the first team to give him a chance at opposite, because they, even though they're absolutely destroying everyone in the Polish Police League this year, they're very kind of on edge when it comes to the Champions League. And having a legit second option at opposite is actually pretty important to them. Obviously, they're going to keep in Lukasz Kaczmarek at all times, if possible. But it is nice to have a switch-up option that you can bring in when Kaczmarek is struggling. And the original reason why they brought in James Shaw in the first place is because Sladimir Jungovic was injured and he's going to be out for the rest of the season. So, you know, you want to have that backup. And bring in James Shaw, I really like the idea. And, you know, he proved it this summer that he can play opposite when he was playing in the, I believe it was something Norsica, when he played in that Norsica tournament, and he played opposite, and he did look pretty good. He scored 23 points in one game, which is pretty impressive for pretty much your first time playing opposite on that level. But it is still a pretty big gamble for Zaxa. I hope it pays off for them, and I'm excited to seeing James Shaw opposite. On paper, he has everything it takes to be able to get opposite, and it's nice that he has played a couple times there before. So I'm just excited to see how he does. And he is not the only American national team player to switch positions in the Polish league this week. It's kind of a funny phrase to say. But Jake Langlois, who's playing on Bedzin right now, has played outside for Team America and on his club team Monza last year and for BYU. He's making the transition to middle, which is not really the most common switch you've ever seen. Honestly, I can't really think of one other time I've seen someone switch from outside position to the middle. We'll see how it goes. He scored 8 out of 16 against Varsovia, which is a good start. And we'll see if he continues to play this position in the future. He is 6'10", so he has the size for the position. And he couldn't pass for anything as an outside, so he doesn't have to do that anymore, which is nice. So, like, he does kind of fit the mold of a middle. It's just weird to see someone switch from being an outside hitter their whole career into a middle. Not something you see terribly often. And it'll be interesting to see if this continues on Team USA, if they find a way to keep him in the middle, or if he's just going to play him at outside again. I think he was a bit overmatched when he played on Team USA, and they probably won't need him that much this summer if Russell, Sander, Jaschke, and DeFalco are all healthy. But, you know, he has been that fifth outside on the US in the past, so it's definitely something to keep an eye on this summer. Although I wouldn't pay too much attention to it in Poland because Bedzin is in last place in the league and will likely get relegated. Now, there are a couple of bits of news from Poland. Andrzej Rona of Warszawa and Grzegorz Lomasz of Bełchatów both signed two-year contracts to remain on their team. It's nice to see players signing for more than 1 year. Makes it a bit less of a mercenary league and provides them with more stability. I don't think either deal really moves the needle much for either team. I am a little surprised that Bełchatów signed Lomasz for two more years. I mean, Yes, he is the setter on the Polish national team. Still a really good player. But he definitely has shown signs of slowing down this season. Definitely not solely responsible for the disappointing season that Skra has had. But a team that's so results-oriented like that, I thought would have maybe sign him for one more year, see how it goes. Or, you know, take a real hard look at maybe getting a younger, more athletic setter. And then also David Kornarski of Jastrzębski Wigil signs for one more year. Again, it's fine. He's having a decent year. He's definitely not the superstar of that team. That would be Julian Lignel, and I would even put it behind Christian Fromm. But that is only for one more year. There's a lot of better Polish opposites than Konarski, like Maciej Muzaj, Lukasz Kaczmarek, Damian Schulz, who I think maybe Jastrzębski maybe should have taken a look at. But, you know, this is fine. It's not a big deal. I hope they didn't pay him too much, though. He always seems like the kind of player that would get massively overpaid because he's such a big name. All right, and I got a few questions about the Russian league, which I generally don't talk about a ton on the podcast or in my YouTube videos. But Nostel asks, do you follow the Russian league? If not, why don't you? And the answer to that is that I do follow the Russian league, not with the same intensity and detail that I follow Italy and Poland and kind of the international game with, but I am generally aware of who wins which games and the standings and who's kind of leading the league and what and all the good players and all the fun things like that. But I don't know like the trade rumors and like the individual injury details and things like that. In fact, today I watched entire game of Zenit Kazan versus Belgorod. So it is fun to watch. As for why I don't like completely focus on it, like I do with Italy and Poland, probably the biggest reason is because there's only two foreigners per team, and a lot of teams don't even have that. I think it's a lot more fun to follow the leagues when you have players from a bunch of different countries participating. You kind of know a lot of them from the different national teams. Just for me personally, that's it makes a league much more enjoyable. And obviously Italy with four foreign players allowed, and Poland with three players allowed, and then France and Germany with unlimited foreign players allowed. It just makes things more fun, especially get to see some of my Canadian players, and it's nice seeing American players succeed overseas as well. Also, the games are on kind of weird times for me. I think the time difference is 9 or 10 hours, so a lot of times the games will be at 5 or 6 a.m. for me, which, you know, and you know, sometimes I'll get up to watch some of the, like the big matchups like today's game, Kazan versus Belgorod, but a lot of times I don't think it's quite worth it to wake up that early just to watch some like Kemerovo versus Ural Ufa or something like that. And the third reason I don't follow it quite as much is because I don't know any Russian people who I can talk volleyball with. So, you know, if you're Russian and you love volleyball and you want to talk and you speak decent English and you want to talk volleyball with someone, hit me up. Always happy to discuss volleyball with my listeners from around the globe. And then there were a couple more questions relating to Russian volleyball. El Magyomula asked, why isn't Matt Anderson getting playing time in Zenit Kazan? And the short answer to that question, which would be he is getting playing time. He has played like about 2/3 of their sets. He's played in all their Champions League matches. He has been dealing with some nagging injuries, which have kept him out of some matches. But, and I think he is like on the first part of his decline. Like, I don't think his level of play is quite as high as it has been in the past, although he is still scoring decently on above 50%. Attack kill percentage, so it's not like he's playing terribly or anything. And Zenit Kazan also has a young player, he's a 96, Andrei Sermachevsky, who came up through their youth club program, who's like a great player. They usually bring him in to serve, and you know, what's the issue if Matt Anderson sits games against easy teams? Like, they get to rest him more, he gets to rest more, they don't risk an injury for him, and they still are undefeated in the Russian league. So it's not like they're missing a ton. Ali Reza, 79AB, asked, where is Grozier playing, the German opposite? And he is playing in Zenit St. Petersburg with Oriol Camejo. And they are looking pretty good. They're looking like one of the best teams in the league. And they are playing in the Champions League too. So if you want to see some Grozier, I would recommend you check out their games on Eurovolley.tv in the Champions League. And then the last question here that I'm going to answer that's kind of directly related to volleyball is from Micah Skinner, and he asks, what's your opinion on the best Canadian prospect? So as a Canadian myself, this is a talking point that's very near and dear to my heart. And we're pretty lucky in Canada that men's volleyball has kind of like increased in popularity quite a bit in the last kind of 10 years or so, especially around about where I live in the GTA. And we're lucky that we have three, I would say, of, you know, top 20 or so best prospects in the world in volleyball right now. And those three guys are Shawn Vernon-Evans, Eric Lepke, and Danin Kofi-Jima. So I'll just give my thoughts on all three of those guys briefly. Shawn Vernon-Evans, obviously the thing that stands out about him the most is that he has one of the highest spike touches in volleyball, not just in volleyball, but like in all of sports. He is reported to have touched 12 foot 6.5 inches, which is just absolutely insanely ridiculously high. I recommend, if you have never seen him play somehow, I highly recommend going and checking out some of his highlights on YouTube or something. But just an absolutely unbelievable athlete. This kind of athlete you don't see in volleyball, if we're being honest here, that often. He played at the World League 2017 and helped Canada get to that bronze medal. He was participating in that as like a 19-year-old. He's only 20 years old right now. So it's pretty insane how good he's been at that young of an age. Actually, I think he was 19 when he was playing in that World League. So he's, you know, burst onto the scene. Obviously, a player really high on everyone's radar. A lot of people would probably have him as the top U21 prospect in the world right now, which is pretty crazy to think about. He is having a bit of a tough year. The last couple of years, he had a pretty serious injury that he needed several surgery and several months of rehab to come back from, and as a result, missed Nations League this summer and was a little bit limited in the World Championships as well. And then the club he played for in Poland, Warszawa, signed the reigning MVP of the world, Bartosz Kurek. And obviously, Shawn's a great player, but he's not going to play in front of him. And even before that, he was splitting time with Rafael Arrufio, who was playing out of his mind, also a really good Brazilian opposite. And then the other player, probably a lot more of you, probably the player out of these three that the least of you have heard of is Eric Lepke, who still plays in the Canadian College League called U Sports here. He plays for a school called Trinity Western, which has produced a lot of elite volleyball talent in Canada over the last decade. A really good program there by Ben Josephson. Eric's like kind of like a typical outside build, 6'6", a really great jumper, really smart player, great passer, great attacker. Just like kind of like has everything you could possibly want out of like a top tier. Like he just checks every box. He's tall enough, he's athletic, great server, really smart player, good defense, works hard. I think out of all three of these players, I think Lepke is like the safest bet. I think there's almost no chance he isn't like an elite, I think there's almost no chance that he isn't just an absolutely incredible player playing at the highest level. And I look forward to watching him kill it in Italy and Poland or wherever he decides to go for the next decade. And then last but not least, we have Kofi-Jima currently playing at UCLA in his junior year, playing with Mika Maha. And those guys have generally been killing it while they were at UCLA. And like Shawan and kind of like Lepke, this guy is just an absolutely like insane athlete. If you haven't checked out his YouTube or Instagram page, I believe it's at Kofi Kid, and he posts like highlights of him like doing back row quicks and like bouncing it to the ceiling or dunking volleyballs or doing all this insane jumping stuff because he's like 6'8 and he has like a 45 inch vertical. So just an absolutely unreal offensive middle. I think a lot of people were a bit surprised when he wasn't on the senior men's national team this summer. He was kind of left off for guys like Lucas Van Berkel and Dan JVD and Arthur Schwark and obviously Graham Bagrass, but that's not really controversial. The reason I've heard that he was left off is because his blocking isn't really at the level they want it at yet. He's great with going up in the middles, but doesn't really have the lateral speed or reading ability to consistently and effectively block at the wings. I don't know. He looks pretty good to me personally, out of all the UCLA games I've watched so far this year and last year. And I think he definitely will end up on the senior team sooner rather than later. But if he works out his blocking, like, he's an absolutely insane attacker. Like, the guy gets so high and is impossible to stop in the middle. And he's really, like, developing a really, really elite and powerful jump serve. Reminds me a lot of Sreko Liznac, actually, if I had to pick one player to compare him to. So that went on a bit longer than I thought, but I do get very excited when I talk about these Canadian prospects that will hopefully maybe one day bring Canada an Olympic medal. But out of all, if I had to choose one guy out of all those three, I would probably pick Shawn Vernon-Evans, because it's extremely rare for a guy to be that good, that young, and perform well on the international stage, even if he was being supported by a really good supporting cast who really allowed him to play to his strengths. And also, I remember the first time I saw Shawn play, he was probably about 14 years old, playing my brother's club team, and I went to go watch, and he just looked like the best volleyball player I've almost ever seen. I was like, okay, this guy could be competing in college right now, and he's only 14. He played outside back then, and he was just hitting over everybody. Nobody could stop him. But I think playing pro is forcing him to develop a lot, start working on good habits, start getting to that, like, pro volleyball mentality, rather than maybe in college, people take things a bit less seriously. So hopefully the being benched for an entire season in Warsaw doesn't discourage him too much, and he has an excellent summer and future with the Canadian national team. I also got a few questions about, like, me personally. I don't know why you guys want to know that stuff, but I will do my best to answer a lot of the kind of personal questions. So if you're just here for the volleyball, you can probably tune out now. But if you want to know a bit more about the man behind the microphone, keep on listening. So Volleyball Daily BR, Instagram account I talk to sometimes. Guy seems like a nice guy. He's very consistent. Always wishes players happy birthday from across the globe. Really wholesome account. Says, how do you decide to write about volleyball? There's a longer story I could tell. Maybe I'll save that for another time. But the short story is that I was really liked watching volleyball. It's always been shown at the Olympics and World Championships and stuff. But other than that, it's really, really, especially as someone living in Canada, it's really, really tough to follow. There's basically no information, no media coverage whatsoever. I know that may seem strange to some of my fans from Europe, but, like, literally, like, no one even knows that professional volleyball exists pretty much here. So I wanted to change that. I thought, well, why not be me? I have the skills, I have the ability, so that's why I decided to start writing about and talking about volleyball. And here we are today. Masood Chalice asks, where are you from and how old are you? I think I've mentioned probably already several times in this podcast, but I am from Canada, more specifically Toronto, and I am 25 years young. Ryan Fries asks, did you play club growing up? And yes, I was a big club player growing up. I played for a club called Interclub Volleyball. We weren't the best, but we had our moments, and I played probably every day when I was a teenager. Usually, it's pretty rare to find someone super passionate about volleyball who didn't at least play for a while. So yes, I did play club growing up, and I would recommend any aspiring young volleyball players to pursue it as early and as passionately as they can. Shenton Sam asks, the best place where I can find back of the court view videos. So I assume he means like a kind of a scouting perspective. And the two places I would go for that, one is if you want like an actual scouting videos that coaches and players use, I would go to Coach Yuri on YouTube. And he has a bunch of really great footage with all the timeouts and breaks removed from major tournaments like Nations League, World Championships, and tournaments like that. And so if you want to watch back of the court footage, that's definitely where I would start. And also, if you Volleyball Source, who I do my Friday podcast with, so you guys are most of you are probably familiar with him, look up his YouTube channel, and he has like literally the best volleyball videos other than mine I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, they're just so mesmerizing to watch. They're so methodical, so hypnotic. And those are from the back of the courts at 60 frames per second, shot in 1080p, and they're just so smooth And I've watched all of them probably like a dozen times. And then the last question I'm going to answer in today's podcast is by HEYOColor52. I probably wrote that down wrong. Anyway, you know who you are. And they ask how to improve your attack. And start off by saying, I'm a pretty good attacker relative to the level I play at. Just a lot better people you could probably ask. But if you can, I would definitely film yourself attacking and try and get advice one place. I don't know if you use Reddit, but the volleyball subreddit is a really good place. If you post your video there, tons of really smart coaches and people will give you advice on how to improve. Or if you know a coach in real life, I would shoot footage and ask them. And sometimes even when you just watch it yourself, you notice things about your attack that you can improve upon. And other than that, you know, the only way to improve skills, just do them as much as possible. What I always used to do is just, I would hit balls against the wall just endlessly when I was younger. And I think it paid off. I have a pretty good arm swing now. All right, guys, thank you for listening to this mailbag. Let me know if you like the idea. And hopefully if you have any questions you think of, I'll try and do this again next Wednesday and you guys can ask me your questions there. I recently was playing Spike Volleyball, which is a new volleyball video game that came out, and I put together a review for that, which I will post to YouTube pretty soon. So remember to check out my YouTube channel, 5-1 Volleyball, my Instagram page, at 5-1VB, if you want me to ask questions next week, or if you just want to check out some cool highlights. And then, of course, 5-1VB.com, where you can check out all my written articles and just like the podcast and everything. I congregate it there. And also you can get your weekly recaps for the Italian and Polish and Champions League there. So anyway, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the podcast today and have a good week.